From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a vaccine appointment. A patient asked what it truly means to get the vaccine for COVID-19. Could she stop social distancing now? Could she get together with friends? The answer she heard was no, not yet. We just don't know if the vaccine will stop you from spreading the virus, even though it's almost certain to protect you from getting sick. Well, time and time again, this has been the message for the public. We don't know yet. Get the vaccine, but don't stop how you're behaving in this pandemic. Don't make changes. Last week, a group of doctors told the New York Times that this is the wrong message. Harvard's Dr. Ashish Jha says the messaging around the vaccine is, quote, driving me a little bit crazy, end quote. Dr. Aaron Richterman, an infectious disease specialist at the University of Pennsylvania, said that we are underselling the vaccine. Dr. Peter Hotez from the Baylor College of Medicine agreed, saying that the message should be, quote, it's going to save your life, end quote. And Dr. Hotez means that in more ways than one. He means that it's going to restore the parts of your life that you miss or need, a job, a social life, a chance to engage with the economy. Dr. Paul Offit, director of the Vaccine Education Center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, said that the public should understand that the COVID vaccines are essentially 100% effective at preventing serious disease. And Dr. Monica Gandhi at the University of California, San Francisco, wrote that after getting vaccinated, you will be safe from the things that matter most, getting the disease and spreading it. But wait a second. Aren't we supposed to wait for more data about spreading COVID? Isn't it possible we can get the vaccine, be safe from serious infection ourselves, but still be a carrier? These doctors say essentially, probably not. They agree, yes, we need more data. We always need more data. And Dr. Jha stresses that there will always be outlier cases. There is never a perfect statistical guarantee. Many vaccines prevent infection and prevent spreading, and there is a reasonable expectation, they say, that the COVID vaccine will dramatically reduce spreading at least, especially in heavier viral loads. David Lenhart, a journalist for the New York Times, says that although no rigorous study has yet analyzed whether vaccinated people can spread COVID, it would be surprising if they did. He quotes Dr. Paul Sachs of Harvard, who wrote in the New England Journal of Medicine recently, quote, if there is an example of a vaccine in widespread clinical use that has this selective effect, prevents disease but not infection, I can't think of one, end quote. And Dr. Gandhi points to emerging data from AstraZeneca that supports this position. She writes that two people who are fully vaccinated can be as close as two spoons in a drawer. Think of it this way. Back in March, there were questions about whether getting sick with COVID would provide any future immunity. We were hearing these one-off stories of somebody who was testing positive again a month later, that kind of stuff. Well, based on history, we know there should be some immunity if you get sick and you recover. And Dr. Anthony Fauci was consistent on that point. He said last spring that we should expect to gain some level of immunity if we get sick with COVID and then recover. That's pretty close to what these doctors are saying about the COVID vaccines. They expect these vaccines to do what vaccines typically do, prevent disease and mostly prevent spreading disease. And they want us to feel the optimism attached to that expectation. Now, that does not mean you can go out and burn your mask after you get two doses of a vaccine. Until we see widespread vaccination, it will be difficult to know who has been vaccinated, especially in public settings. Masking is a common courtesy, a wise move, and the more people who remove their masks in public, the more others will be tempted to remove their masks, even if they're not vaccinated. That would be a very bad thing. These doctors are saying we can proceed carefully, but with more optimism. So our guests are going to help us understand what we know, what we don't know, and they're going to answer your questions. And we've been hearing from you about some of these appointments people have had. People have been asking us, hey, I was told this is only emergency use. What's that mean? Or it made me feel uneasy. It made me nervous. I kind of thought twice about it. We heard someone who decided at that moment not to get the vaccine. I heard from someone who said their pulmonologist told them that AstraZeneca is not to be trusted. There's a lot out there. Let's talk about all of that and more with our guests this hour. And I will welcome them now. Dr. Emil Leshu is with us, an infectious disease and internal medicine specialist at Rochester Regional Health. Dr. Leshu, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
And Dr. Renwa Dumiati is with us, a professor in infectious diseases in the Department of Medicine and the Center for Community Health and Prevention at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Dumiati, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Dr. Leshu, let me start with you. When it comes to what we know and don't know, how would you evaluate the messaging for the public on the vaccines? I mean, in other words, do you agree with who the New York Times was talking to, these doctors who said this ought to be viewed as a damn near miracle, how good these vaccines are already and how much optimism they should give us?
In short, no, I don't fully agree with what they're saying. One thing I need to keep, you made a very compelling argument in your introduction there as to, you know, why we might be able to feel comfortable about relaxing the recommendations of social distancing. But I think we have to keep in mind the levels of strength of evidence, what we look to in medical practice. And what you've all cited was expert opinion. So all those physicians and experts that you had cited were giving their expert opinion. And, you know, I fully acknowledge they are more expert than I am in this, but expert opinion is the lowest level of medical evidence, right? So there, and as you also pointed out, there is a lack of data. So the highest level of strength of evidence would be, numerous randomized controlled trials. And we just don't have that yet. So that's, I'd be very cautious about this. And, furthermore, one of the physicians you quoted, Offit, Dr. Paul Offit, also made an opinion countering the statements that he made there, saying that, and this is true, the vaccines are very good, but they're not 100%. So if you have 95%, effectiveness, you still have a potential for one out of every 20 people who comes in contact with the virus to potentially develop severe infection. So he pointed that out as one of the main reasons why you should continue to wear masks and socially distance.
And to that point, actually, what he has said is, his quote to the Times was, I'm going to go back to this point because I think it's important and I'm glad you raise it. He said, Dr. Offit said, that the public should understand that the COVID vaccines are essentially 100% effective at preventing serious disease. His clarification on that is, yes, if you're in the 1 in 20 who gets vaccinated and you end up with COVID, it is statistically almost certain to be a mild case. That means a non-hospitalized case. You're not likely to need supplemental oxygen or any sort of ICU assistance. And that is based on thousands upon thousands of people participating in the trials and the infections we have seen. So what he's saying is, if you're in that 5%, it's going to be mild. Is that different than what you've seen, Dr. Lesha?
I have a quotation from him here from an NPR segment that he did that's in quote. It says, that means one out of every 20 people who get this vaccine could still get moderate to severe infection, close quotation. So the number one reason to continue with precautions is to protect yourself. But I also would add to that, it's also to protect others.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think anybody disagrees that we're nowhere close to the end of masking, unfortunately, and I don't want to wear a mask anymore. Or physical distancing. I think it's a question of if you're in a family member. So, Dr. Lesha, if you have your two shots and you've got a family member who has had the two shots and time has passed, are you comfortable being around them if they're not in the same household? Are you comfortable being around them indoors without masks right now? I'm not talking about going out in public and being in large groups. I'm talking about just you and a friend or you and a family member who's not in the same household who've both been vaccinated now.
No, I experience that situation every day with my colleagues at work. Many of us have received both of our vaccine shots, some of us more than 2 or 3 weeks ago. Yet we still mask. We still share, if we're in office spaces and stuff, both of the parties who've been fully vaccinated still mask.
Okay, Dr. Dumiani, can you give me your thoughts about sort of the public messaging and what the public ought to be thinking about with these vaccines?
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Lesha as well. And what is really missing from this is what we really need is a large number of people vaccinated around us to let our guard down. We also need to, make sure that the number of cases in the community where you live is also lower. So you have to take all these things into consideration and to decide, when should vaccinated people let their guard down and stop masking. I think there is a messaging issue because we're careful because we don't have all the data yet. So we want to make sure that We do everything possible to prevent, you know, you from getting sick or transmitting to other until we get more data. And we're very hopeful that with these vaccines that are very effective, that with time, the number of cases will go down and the number of vaccinated people will go up, and one day we'll go back to normal. But right now, we just have to keep doing what we're doing because we have a very, very few number of people vaccinated so far.
Let me read what Dr. James Hablin said in The Atlantic about a future where we eventually don't have to mask and social distance. He writes, quote, "The variable in the countdown to mask-free life is how quickly entire communities get vaccinated, not just individuals. When the virus is spreading widely and very few people are vaccinated, the chance that a vaccinated person will carry the virus and possibly even get sick, since no vaccine is 100% effective, is simply too high to suggest that anyone forego masking for now. But as more and more people get vaccinated, the potency of each vaccine grows. Even if vaccinated people do prove to have the potential to carry and spread the virus in small amounts for brief periods, that risk can be rendered moot if almost everyone gets vaccinated," end quote. Do you agree with that, Dr. Dumiani?
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And, you know, we do have example, for example, measles, where less and less people are vaccinated, where we see now more and more outbreak and transmission. So we need a vaccine that's very effective to protect you, but to protect a community, you need many people vaccinated to protect everyone.
Okay. Listeners, if you've got questions, comments, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. And before I get to some of your phone calls, I want to address an issue that one of our listeners emailed me about, said that she was told by a pulmonologist in town that AstraZeneca as a vaccine is not to be trusted. Now, again, this is a little bit of a game of telephone. I wasn't there for that conversation. And I'm aware of other listeners telling us that when they went to get vaccinated, they were warned, hey, this is just emergency use. Are you sure you want to do this? Almost like a, you know, hey, you're taking a risk here. What are you doing? Which is probably not most people's experience in getting vaccinated, but it has happened. It has made some people uneasy. So I think what we should ask our guests to do, I'll start with Dr. Dumiati, is to clarify, when you hear emergency use authorization, what that means and what the current status of these vaccines is, because I don't want people to think they're not vetted or that they haven't been researched, because they have been. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll also talk about just AstraZeneca. I suspect the pulmonologist in this case was simply saying, hey, you know, they had an issue with their trials and public communication about data that, you know, made some people uncomfortable. But from what I understand about AstraZeneca, that has been cleared up pretty well. But Dr. Dumiani, do you want to start on that?
Can I start with the authorization?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Please.
Yeah, so, understanding, you know, emergency use authorization is important. And I think this FDA approval has put in place after an emergency such as the 9/11, so, 9/11 in 2001. So by 2004, the FDA is authorized to use an unapproved medical product or an unapproved, vaccine if there is a public health emergency. And what it helps with is they look at multiple variables, you know, what is happening? Is there an emergency? What is available? And can we approve something quickly, looking both at the risk of disease and the risk of harm from the product, like a vaccine. So all these things are taken into consideration. And in this situation, it kind of speeds up the rollout or the distribution or the approval of a new product because we really need it because people are dying. And this is what's happening with COVID. A lot of people are getting sick and a 20% of people, a large proportion of people, I would say, especially the elderly, are dying. So we needed a product or a treatment that we could approve very quickly. But this doesn't mean that, you know, the studies that have been done have taken shortcut. On the contrary, all the studies have been very rigorous. And, you know, the requirement for a vaccine approval requires 3,000 patients to be in the trial. And in this situation, there have been you know, 30, 40,000 people that are included in the trial and followed for, you know, a significant duration. So definitely there is no shortcut. The other thing that has happened is, you know, as you're doing the trial, there is commonly a review for safety, and that is the first step. Once the vaccine is ready to kind of go through the FDA approval, there is a lot of guidance that's needed and data, and that data is reviewed by a committee called VRBPAC, or Vaccine and Related Biological Product Advisory Committee. And this is kind of an independent group of people that have no conflict of interest that, you know, look at the data and can advise the FDA, you know, do we see benefit and do we see harm, and is the benefit more than the harm? And that's what really happened with the vaccine. And as a requirement, because, you know, they need more data to approve and license the vaccine, such as data over like longer period of time, which we don't have the luxury right now of having, you know, what happens in 6 months, what happened in a year, that is needed to eventually license a product such as a vaccine, and at this point is not available. So all these things are put in place, and they are required to tell, you know, the person that's receiving the vaccine, we need to tell you that this has been approved looking at the risk and benefit. And we find more benefit than risk, but you are allowed to refuse the vaccine. And we are going to monitor, you know, the vaccine harm over time. And, you know, this might change. So they want to be very transparent about the whole process, but it doesn't mean that this was not done well. It's just it's based on preliminary data and based on the emergency, you know, that we are dealing with. Basically.
Okay. And Dr. Dumyati, how do you, what would you say to listeners who may encounter that scenario where, you know, just that moment right when they're about to get vaccinated, if someone is sort of casting doubt about this, you know, we've heard from listeners who've been in that spot and it was sort of an uneasy situation. What would you tell them?
Yeah. I'll tell them I got the vaccine because I want everyone to get the vaccine and so we can go back to normal life. You know, there is a thousands and thousands of people have been vaccinated with very, you know, known, you know, reaction to the vaccine that's similar to what I experienced with the shingle vaccine. I think even the shingle vaccine was worse as far as, you know, fever, fatigue, headache. But so far we haven't seen really anything major, and all those side effects are, you know, kind of limited for a day or two. So far, we really are very excited about this vaccine. First of all, it's very effective, which is a miracle that we have, you know, gotten a vaccine that's so effective. And the second thing, the, you know, even though there's some side effect, these are mild, and they tell us that you are really, your immune system is responding to the vaccine. So I was happy to see that I have some side effects of the first vaccine. You know, I was expecting more the second, but I guess some people don't get, as you get older, you don't get as much reaction. So I would, you know, I would tell people, please trust this vaccine. This is what we really need to get as many people vaccinated so we can go back to a normal life.
All right. And Dr. Lesho, what would you say to listeners who might encounter in the process of applying or even going to get the vaccine, a little bit of that concerning language that makes them feel uneasy?
I think that's a great concern and a great question. So first, I agree with everything Dr. Dumyati said. I would additionally direct them to an internet link that nicely describes the difference between emergency use authorization and FDA approval. And it also has a video as well. I can send the link to you or Megan after the program.
Sure, absolutely.
But I would also say, you know, when we were encouraging our employees to get vaccinated, and they had similar concerns about safety, I would remind them that at one point, and it still may be, COVID was the leading cause of death in the United States. You had more of a chance of getting COVID and being harmed, some level of harm by it, than even in being in an auto accident. And you know, when we still get auto insurance. even if you don't get, severely ill with COVID, if you don't end up in an ICU, there's evidence, there's studies out there that show that up to 70% of the people who were in the hospital for any length of time because of COVID, up to 70% of those will have some type of residual symptom 6 months or later. So I would say the risk of getting harmed is much, much higher from not getting the vaccine because the chance of getting COVID is so high than the risk of, a significant reaction from the vaccine itself.
Okay. And I'm going to get some phone calls in here. Just to look at some of the data, for example, in AstraZeneca's trials, AstraZeneca reported that in the number of patients who received the vaccine and not the placebo, so actual vaccine recipients during their trials, there was a small percentage of those patients who still got COVID-19. Zero of those patients needed hospitalization. So zero were deemed severe in the AstraZeneca trial. Trying to dig up Pfizer and Moderna, I mean, I have read.
Yeah, similar.
As I recall, it's similar. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Moderna had zero and Pfizer had one.
Had one. One person.
Yeah.
In the three, yeah, the three companies that have published data that we can consume here, and two are in use in the United States, one person total who got the actual vaccine and not a placebo needed hospitalization, and there have been zero deaths. So that's, I think that's why when we hear, whether it's Dr. Offit or others saying, telling the New York Times, you're just about 100% protected from actual severe infection, that's what they mean. There's very little chance once you get vaccinated that you're going to get COVID at all. If you do, you're almost certainly not going to end up in the hospital and fighting for your life. That's what the results have shown us. But I do want to take some of your phone calls on these subjects. And let me start with Ray in Mendon. Thanks for waiting, Ray. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Macedon. Hey. Go ahead, Ray.
Hey, great, Dion. Thanks for your show. Listen, I'm not going to talk because I'm not very grandiloquent, but my concern is, this whole efficacy of masks and lockdowns, it seems like that hasn't worked. I keep hearing that the CDC is recommending masks, but then I also hear that no peer-reviewed studies have shown that they're significant in thwarting the disease. Another question, usual time span for vaccine studies, this one doctor says it's usually 10 to 15 years, maybe even 5 if it was great, but here we are in the first year, so that's kind of concerning. The speed of cycling these tests, these positive test results, It sounds like they ramped it up to a speed where you could get a false, you could get a positive, like from your car. I mean, I don't know. It's just that, truth is so foggy these days that old guys like me, we don't know what to think. So, I'll play poker with my cat, I think, before I get this vaccine. But
I'll tell you what, Ray, I appreciate the phone call, and I'm going to kick it to our guests here. Let me just give you a little bit of brief info before we let the experts talk about this. And I appreciate the phone call because, I know you want to be safe and healthy, and I know you want to protect people around you, and so I appreciate that. Number one, there is a lot better data that we've seen in recent months about masking, and masking certainly does help. And this has We now have various data points. I'm happy if you want to send me an email, Ray. I'll send you an email back. They're not perfect. And we know N95 is better than a cloth mask. And, so there's different forms of masks. And they are not perfect, but they are definitely, definitely better than nothing. I mean, they certainly are things we ought to be adopting. And there is data on that. So don't believe that there's no data. I can help you with that. And in regards to the speed, I'll let the doctors talk about this. One thing to keep in mind here, Ray, see, for me, I'm not a medical researcher. And the way it was described to me was like this here. You had SARS, MERS years ago, and they started working on vaccines. Those are coronaviruses. And they started working on vaccines. And because they started working on those vaccines, they kind of created the basis for what they would end up using to deal with COVID. It's kind of like if you start gathering the ingredients and doing the research and starting to get the materials together to bake a cake at noon, and then you decide at 3 p.m, you're not baking a cake that day, and you set everything aside, but you've done the research. And then the next day, someone says, boy, I really could use a cake. And you go, well, I started researching this already, and I've got half the materials already gathered here. And then an hour later, you got a cake. And they go, well, that was fast. Well, it's a good thing you had a head start on it, because we had a lot of advantages going into this. It was a good thing that this was a coronavirus that gave us a chance to do that. So I don't want you to think that this was reckless or without regard to rules or, you know, just sort of sloughed off on any of the details they needed done here. That was one of the ways it was described. But I'll let both Drs. Dumiati and Lesho jump in. I'll start with Dr. Dumiati. Go ahead, Dr. Dumiati.
So, yeah, I agree. Everyone is concerned that this was done too fast. And, you know, there was a reason to do it too fast. And what really helped is that we had the government brought multiple agencies. There was international collaboration between academic, pharmaceutical. And so the coordination really helped to speed up the process. There was already, you know, work being done on vaccine, not for specifically this one corona vaccine. We had MERS, we had SARS. We also were thinking of an influenza vaccine using the present method. So there was a lot of ongoing research happening, and we knew a lot about, as you said, coronavirus as well. So, and we had all the coordination. And what also has happened, investment in manufacturing and capacity. We put a lot of money. The FDA also removed some of the kind of the hurdle of, you know, submitting results and reviewing results. So everything kind of went very smoothly with the coordination that really led to us, you know, finding the data, reviewing the data for safety and efficacy and approving, you know, this vaccine to be used because this is an emergency with a lot of death and we needed to do something without taking, you know, any shortcuts. All the studies have been rigorous. They have been reviewed and FDA advised, you know, there was a plan how they should be done and what should be reported and everyone followed it to be able to apply for the emergency use authorization. And the review process has been also been very rigorous and it has been transparent. So people can log in to the sessions where the vaccine results were reviewed and allowed to ask questions. So there is a lot of transparency about the data as well. And I'm not sure if, Emil, Dr. Lesho, you want to add anything else?
No, I totally agree. For the reasons that you and Evan had said, so there's a lot of foundational data that's already in place. We have another technology at our disposal now that we didn't have years back, and that's called whole genome sequencing. That's like the genetic, finding the entire genetic makeup of an organism within, you know, essentially days or weeks after the virus emerged in Wuhan. The Chinese shared that sequence with the world. They were able to determine that sequence quickly. That was the data that was needed to develop these mRNA vaccines as well. And then a lot of the financial risk was taken out of it because of the government investment. So it's very expensive for a drug company to make a new drug or to make a new vaccine because they don't want to spend a lot of resources and time doing something that might not, you know, that so they go slow, they take it in steps. Because of the financial risk. And when the government removed a lot of that financial risk for them, they were able to, that was another thing that sped up the timeline.
Yeah, I appreciate that, doctors. And I just want to say to Ray and Masson, much love to you. I know that some of the time this can feel either confusing or there's competing information. But as the doctors mentioned, we've got a lot of really good data here. And we had some advantages in this one. So those are all good things, and that's part of the reason that some of your neighbors are getting vaccinated now and that we're taking step by step down the path to where we need to go with this. After our only break of the hour, we're going to come back. Rich, if you're on the line, hang there. Simon in Pittsford, we'll take your phone call. We've got a bunch of emails. We'll try to answer as much as we can with Drs. Renwa Dumiati and Dr. Emil Lesho, who are helping us understand vaccines and where we are in this process right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation with small landlords. Many landlords are not out-of-state corporations or wealthy individuals. They are working men and women right here in Rochester, and they're struggling just as their tenants are struggling. They don't want to evict people most of the time, but they're struggling to pay their mortgages. The Washington Post writes that landlords aren't getting much sympathy or empathy. We'll talk with them next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Here is a note from a listener who shares the following. What do your guests think of this exchange between my parents and their doctor that just happened today? And sends the following note on this. Let's see here. Interesting information that the doctor gave us. I told him that my mother got her COVID vaccine on Tuesday. He says the first shot will last until the second shot, and the second shot will only last for 4 months of protection. He says, what are you going to do after that? It's a good thing that you guys had COVID, because now you have herd immunity, end quote. That, again, we're playing a little bit of a game of telephone here, but Dr. Lesho, my understanding so far is that there is some expectation that the durability of what we receive from the vaccine is potentially stronger and deeper than an infection and convalescing. What do you know about that, Dr. Lesho?
That's my understanding as well. That's correct. From talking to people who've been involved in the vaccine development, including here, you know, at University of Rochester and RGH. Number two, herd immunity does not imply to an individual. It implies to the population. So it could be that, and the timeline that was quoted by the person's physician is a little bit off. So again, we like to stick with what was done in the vaccine studies of the approval pathway. The approval pathway required people to get the vaccine, the second vaccine, within a 4 to 5 day window from whether it be the Moderna or the Pfizer vaccine, it was 3 or 4 weeks. So if possible, our recommendation is that the patient should get their second vaccine as close to day 21 or day 28 as possible. That said, if they can't do that, you should get the second vaccine as soon as possible, you know, after that. And it's not any less effective by doing that. It's just that during the longer that time period lapses, the less likely you're going to be fully protected. You're not considered fully protected until a couple weeks after the second vaccine. So at least 80, perhaps more, percent of the population has to be immune to a disease before you consider their herd immunity to exist.
Okay. Yeah, Dr. Dumiani, I have not heard anybody say that the first shot lasts until the second and the second shot lasts for 4 months. That is not anything that I've read scientifically accurate. Is that what have you heard?
Yeah, that's exactly it. We know, though, that after your first shot, you know, within 10 days or 2 weeks, there is less disease. So you get some protection with the first dose, but you need the second dose. And then you become fully immune a week or two later after your second dose. And, how long will the immunity last? And that's what we're going to find out with time. It's probably going to be, you know, I'm hoping, you know, several years, but we're going to follow and see. Most of the vaccine, you're immune for life. But if the virus changes, we might need to have a booster with a different kind of vaccine. So we have to just wait and see, and we have to evaluate it with, you know, further study. And we will be tracking people over time that develop COVID to see if they were vaccinated and if, you know, how the vaccine is doing as well.
Yeah, and I'll just want to put a point on what Dr. Dumiani said for the listener who sent that question about their parents. There is a need for more data, but there is a reasonable hope that we're not talking about just 4 months or 3 months or 6 months, that we're talking at least a year, maybe 2 years, and if we're lucky, maybe even more than that. But we need more time. The expectation, though, is it's going to be better than 4 months. So thank you for that. Let me grab Rich in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Rich.
Hello, Evan. How are you doing?
Good, sir.
I'm doing good. I listen to all this misinformation and everything that's going on about vaccines. What seems to be happening is that even within the medical profession, you have these camps. Like, I think, example, like this doctor making that statement to those two parents, I thought that was totally out of line. I mean, how can he make a statement about something lasting 4 months when there hasn't been enough data, even for 4 months of data? That's to me, that's crazy. But I reiterate all the time to people, vaccines are probably the safest thing we've ever done medically, outside of washing your hands. You know what I mean? The billions upon billions of vaccines that have been given since we started these things, and the numbers of deaths or the numbers of really bad reactions are almost minuscule. And also, like anything else, we're getting better. We're making these vaccines different. I'm a person who spends time reading about this. But even in your two guests, I have to say that one guest seems to be very overly cautious. And even as a person who understands this, to spend my time, I think his messaging, and it's to him, is alarming. I think his messaging, he's being too conservative, and it's coming off as if he does not have any confidence in it. And he, and I think each one of the professions, and not, it just, I'm sitting here as a person listening on the radio who understands it. And I think he, I think many professionals do a horrible job of messaging, and unfortunately, I think he's not doing a good job.
Oof. Well, listen, Rich, I mean, I appreciate the phone call, and, you know, I mean, our, we can all take criticism. I think, and I'll let Dr. Lesho speak for himself, he is simply trying to communicate the data we have and the data we don't yet have and what that means to him. And that's important because we have to be able to talk about what we do know and what we don't know or what we don't yet know. Dr. Lesho, you want to add to that?
Well, you know, I thank the caller for that feedback, and we always, you know, strive to communicate better. I fully agree with the caller that physicians, including myself, are not the best messengers and can improve. But, you know, that said, I am, you know, to be sounding too cautious or too conservative, we have to understand that COVID-19 is new. We've been dealing with this for only a year right now. And so I agree that vaccines are safe. I agree that they provide a lot of benefit, but I think we have to proceed somewhat cautiously, maybe too deferential to the data, but it might be in terms of reacting to all the misinformation or all the hype or stuff that's been out there. But yeah, thank you guys for the feedback.
Simon in Pittsburgh next on the phone. Go ahead, Simon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I mean, I think it's pretty evident. Evan, you mentioned this. You know, you talked about sort of telephone. I think you're absolutely right if using that term because, you know, we do live in a world where information is not only propagated through the Internet or through newspapers, but also at the dinner table. And so that's how misinformation like that can spread. You know, one of the things that the reason I originally called was you guys were talking about the AstraZeneca vaccine, the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine.
Yeah.
There was a, you know, I remember at one point hearing that they had signed a deal with a Chinese company for distribution, and that's all I had heard about it. This was at some kind of dinner table or some kind of conversation with a friend. I don't remember exactly when I heard about it, and that made me concerned. I think people get finicky about China because of their lack of transparency when it came to the virus initially. Now, of course, as one of the doctors mentioned, they had released the sequence early, but they weren't completely, you know, transparent about the infection rates, et cetera. And so, admittedly, I was a little bit worried. And then I did a little bit more research about it, and I found out that the distribution deal had been made with the Chinese company exclusively for mainland China. So these are the type of things that if you're not fully informed on what's happening, then you won't... then there might be, you might develop more unnecessary reservations about a vaccine. And so, I think this obviously means that we need to, you know, think about how we get our information, where are we hearing the information from, because that's just sort of a quick example of how I personally had to educate myself. So.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I appreciate it, Simon. Thank you for that. And right, I mean, I think when we hear cases of even doctors, and again, anecdotally, but doctors or healthcare providers, people who are offering and doing the work of providing the vaccines, spreading information that might not be accurate, you know, you do wonder what the sort of the genesis of that was, where it came from, and it can snowball downhill. So I appreciate that, Simon, and I think it's a good call for all of us just to to try to be careful and humble and open to continue to learn and read. That's why I offered Ray and Macedon. If you want to send me an email, edawson@wxxi.org, I'm happy to send you what I've got on the value of masking, things like that, because we probably can't communicate effectively enough and repeatedly enough. That's why we have multiple programs about vaccines, not because I'm in the tank for vaccines. I don't get anything. The only thing I get out of this is a better world and a community that wants to get back on track as soon as possible. But we are trying to understand the data, and I really do appreciate that. Now, on a couple of other points from listeners, Carol says, it seems that today's show is attempting to encourage citizens to take the vaccine. I'm 76. I would gladly do so, but try as I may, I cannot find a site that is taking appointments. I ask you, please do a show on that. Carol, I'm with you. The good news right now is that there is high demand, and that means that people want it, and every time we get vaccines, a supply in, they'll get used. I promise you that eventually, Carol, we will have enough supply to get to everybody. I don't know when exactly that'll be. AstraZeneca coming online in our country would probably speed that up. We're seeing a new presidential administration that has really prioritized trying to get production and supply and capacity up. We could see Johnson & Johnson and Norovax online somewhat soon. That's possible. So we will eventually see a situation where we've, and it's probably sooner than later, where we've got a lot more than we currently have. I share your frustration about the total supply, and we will talk about that on coming shows. I hear you. I just want to say, I know people are frustrated. My own parents in Cleveland are frustrated. I'm going to jump online and help them when I get off the show today with them. So I hear you, but it's coming. It's coming. Yeah, go ahead, Dr.
Yeah, Dumont. I can just add one thing. Just be patient. We'll get there. Just keep what you're doing to remain safe.
Yep.
But be patient. We'll get there.
We can get there. We are seeing the light here. Denise wants to know, is there any recent info on vaccine trials with children under the age of 16? That's from Denise. I'll start with Dr. Dumiati.
Pfizer is planning, I'm not sure if they started, but they're planning vaccines from starting from age of 12. So hopefully we'll have, enough recruitment and some data soon.
And is that, Dr. Dumiati, is that sort of a typical step-by-step that you do adults first, then you do teens, then you do younger once you get good safety data?
It depends on the vaccine. I am not sure if this is, the common process.
Okay.
Dr. Lesho, do you have can you add anything?
It depends on the vaccine and who's going to, like, if it's a disease that's pretty much restricted to elderly people, then sure. But, I'm not aware of anything beyond what Dr. Dumiati said.
And when it comes to masking and, taking good community steps to protect one another, here's Sarah Zhang writing in The Atlantic today. Quote, the U.S. likely can't reach herd immunity without vaccinating children, according to many experts. Even though kids rarely get very ill from COVID-19, pediatricians say there is a good case for vaccinating them. And the main reason is numbers, herd immunity, and the achievement of that, which is likely to come later this year or next, depending on when a vaccine is available for kids. Dr. Lesho, you want to start on that? Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. In some studies, children have had higher viral loads. So the higher amount of virus that you have in your respiratory tract, the more, potential there is for you to transmit it to others. And what if, you have a relatively asymptomatic child who's positive and they want to visit their grandparents, or they're adults who have chronic conditions? That's the critical reason for that. I also, before we run out of time, want to point out another reason why masking and social distancing remain so important, and that's the presence or the emergence of these mutated variants. So you hear about the United Kingdom variant and the South African variant, and fortunately, some of the preliminary studies from Pfizer and Moderna show that those vaccines will retain effectiveness against those, but it depends on how much more they continue to mutate. And the more they mutate, the more people that get infected, that gives the virus more opportunity to mutate. And so we know already from what happened in Great Britain and other countries that these are 50 to 70% more contagious. So where you might be able to get away with a little bit of sloppiness on the mask use, with the old strain, you might not get away with it this time. And so based on the community prevalence that we've seen in Monroe County, where recently it was higher than 500 persons per 100,000 residents, that's the same prevalence that was seen with those variants in the United Kingdom. So we in Rochester area have not confirmed through whole genome sequencing that those mutations exist, but epidemiologists fully expect that they do based on the community prevalence.
Interesting. And are you concerned, Dr. Lesho, that as we head to the back end of winter, that the community lets its guard down a bit, and with these new variants more prevalent, that we could see another surge or even higher spikes?
Exactly. Well, I am. You know, we see that cycle, with this and other pandemics. It's just normal human nature. We, the situation gets out of control. It gets concerning. We restrict our behavior. The prevalence goes down. The number of infections goes down. We get a little more relaxed. And then you have another wave come back.
Dr. Dumiati, Susan from Fairport says, I had COVID in December. My quarantine ended December 28th. I was sick with flu-like symptoms, but not hospitalized. So I'm wondering, when should I get the vaccine? Is there a period of time that I should wait? And because I had COVID, is my immunity the same as an individual who has had both shots in a vaccine? Also, should I get antibody testing done? Go ahead, Dr. Dumiati.
So if she had a proven, kind of by test that she was positive and she has recovered, so it's like 10 or 14 days later, she qualifies for the vaccine. And we expect her immune response to be similar to others. There was some guidance that if there is a limited amount of vaccine, that people who were recently infected can wait around 90 days, because we know that most of the people that had COVID are immune for at least 90 days after their infection. But we are recommending that anyone who has recovered from their illness to get their vaccine. We have had people that develop COVID after the first dose because it was just too early before their immune system was up and running. So so we are recommending that they also get the second dose once they recover.
Okay. And good luck to that listener. Again, if you've had COVID, they're saying it's okay to get the vaccine. It's still a good idea to, and a vaccine may give you a stronger and more durable immunity. Gail says, my mom is 95 years old. Her PCP does not want her vaccinated because she has respiratory problems, yet nursing home patients are encouraged to get this vaccine. My understanding is everyone should get the vaccine unless an allergy is present. What should we tell her? When should she get the vaccine? Dr. Dumiati, you want to hit that one too?
Yeah. Please give her the vaccine once it's available. Anyone above the age of 65 qualifies. I know we have limited supplies, but this is the population that's more at risk of severe disease and death. And I would, there were some people in the studies that were older, and the benefit was similar. The efficacy was similar to the younger people. So I would definitely give her the vaccine once it's available.
Okay. Eric in Rochester called, and I don't have time to take the call, but I'll mention that he says that his daughter in West Virginia, living in West Virginia, says they've got a telephone tree sharing appointments with people in West Virginia about vaccination. And I think there's going to be, as more people become eligible for the vaccine, you're going to see more public outreach. And we're talking about that next week on this program with Dr. Nana Bennett, who has just been a phenomenal local leader with that, Wade Norwood as well. And so we appreciate their time. And they'll tell you more about what we know about that next week on this program. We've got just over a minute left, so maybe about 40 seconds apiece. Dr. Lesho, some final thoughts from you as we think about vaccines and what comes next in this pandemic. Go ahead.
I would encourage anybody to get the vaccine that's eligible for the vaccine. I share the frustration with the one caller who has, the elderly caller who has not been able to get the vaccine, but I echo others' comments to be patient and keep trying. We also have to make it, available through non-technologic reasons. Many patients do not have access to the internet and can't go to these websites to determine or make an appointment. And so RGH is addressing that, as well as other, I'm sure other health systems are addressing that as well. I think it's critical, though, to continue to do social distancing and wear masks until we know more about it.
Dr. Dumiani, 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Same thing. I really, when if you are a priority group and once the vaccine is available, please get it. This is the only way we will be able to get out of this pandemic. Otherwise, we're going to be masking and social distancing for years. You know, it took 2 years for the 1918 flu to get under control. So please, once the vaccine is available and you are on the list, please get your vaccine.
Well, we're always grateful for the time for the experts in our community. Dr. Renwa Dumiati, professor in infectious diseases in the Department of Medicine and the Center for Community Health and Prevention at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Dumiati, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for inviting me to talk.
Always good to have you. Dr. Imalesha Same, infectious disease and internal medicine specialist at Rochester Regional Health. We are grateful for your time, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right, listeners, hang with us as we continue throughout this pandemic winter. As I said, next week we've got a lot more coming your way. And whenever you do have questions on really any subject, kick them our way. Sometimes they're great little seeds for our planning purposes. We need to know what you are wondering out there. More connections coming up.